Welcome, everybody, to episode 182 of the Whiskey and Watches podcast. It's been a while, to quote the Staind song, if everybody remembers from the early aughts, I want to say.
Yes, early mid-aughts. I think it was closer to early, but I want to feel better about myself and say mid.
Yeah.
And there was nothing mid about the mid-aughts before you zoomers get on the case.
So I want
better
to say,
times.
Here's where I go. I know when I graduated high school, and I know roughly when you graduated high school. And what I would say is I feel like that's a high school song, and I know that I graduated in 05, which makes me think it's earlier rather than later, but we'll hope that it might have been in college.
Yeah, no, you're right. It was definitely a high school song for me, too. And you have to start playing fast and loose with the definition of mid.
Oh, completely. Well, and, you know, I apologize to the listeners. I sound a little congested. I will say that since we last recorded, there has been significant travel from, I think, more than at least one of us, if not two or all three. But I will say that, let's just say, when you get six young kids together, the only thing you bring home from – you don't only bring leftovers home from Thanksgiving.
Obviously.
So we're working through a virus, something – nothing bad, just kind of a, you know, the old thing. But yes, I've been driven to and from South Carolina, been to Des Moines, and then been to Chicago, all since we last recorded, which, yes, it's been a while, but it's been a heck of a travel month for me, at least. And I know, Buzzy, you've been up north.
Yep. Up north. Got to watch the Browns beat the Steelers in person, from my dad's season ticks, which are right in front of where the Browns special teams practice, right? So I was able to watch Dustin Hopkins warm up, and then the game-winning field goal was also right in front of us. So that was pretty great. Yeah.
Nice.
Got to spend the day cheering on the Browns. There was so much energy in that stadium. I had never fully experienced this before. Even when we gave up just the dumbest frickin' touchdown in the world to start the second half. I feel like people believed we were going to win that game the entire time. Confidence. We won't talk about what happened in Denver last week. One of my buddies was at that game, too. But it was great.
Well, and it would have been nice had the Bengals been able to beat the Steelers this week with their backup quarterback. It was a close game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't get me started on that.
Anyway.
Hey,
devastating.
Find you someone that believes in you like the Steelers believe in Kenny Pickett. Right, that's relationship advice. Because whether you deserve it or whether you don't, you know, you'll have someone in.
I'll be honest; it all has to do with that fake slide he pulled at Pitt. Do you remember that in the bowl game? The fake that I mean, you got to admit that's a pretty sick move.
I think I saw.
There's a rule against it now. Yeah.
I saw a stat recently that it said that Kenny Pickett has fewer touchdown passes than C.J. Stroud. And Kenny Pickett's been in the league for like 2 years. I'm just saying.
Well, but you have to remember, though, the Steelers, and I think this is hilarious because even though it was a close game against the Bengals in some pretty crappy weather on Sunday here in Cincinnati, it was a very low-scoring game. But I want to say that I don't really follow the Pat McAfee show, but I've seen it a couple of times, and all the times I've seen it, they've been talking about firing Matt Canada, who did just get fired. Yes. And I think his entire tenure as the offensive coordinator for the Steelers was marked by not achieving 400 yards of total offense. They fire him, and then against the Bengals, and it's still a very close game, they put up 400 yards of total offense.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's just kind of like, maybe you are the problem.
Well, I mean, everyone that was obviously upset with them missed a golden opportunity to rally behind the claim of, you know, blame Canada, like from the South Park movie.
Oh,
right.
From what I recall, though, if you hear it anywhere that McAfee showed up on a college campus or at a bunch of different games, like, there were fire Canada chants everywhere.
Right, but they should have rallied behind the phrase, blame Canada.
That's true. That's true. Shame. Well, but that doesn't require action, whereas fire Canada is way more actionable.
That's true. That's true. By the way, time to feel old, partner. It's been a while. It was released in 2001.
Ooh, that was a seventh grade
March song. March 27th. The World Trade Center was still intact.
Wait, 2001? Yeah. Okay. That was eighth grade. Sorry, eighth grade, not seventh grade. Eighth grade. Oof, big oof right there.
Yeah, hard.
Wait, this show's about watches, right?
No.
No, maybe we should get into that.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. It is.
I mean, I can keep shitting on the Steelers. I'm fine with that.
It is. And some, there's alcohol that's adjacent to that. So since I kind of forgot how this goes, Spangler, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, holy shit. I have not been on in quite the long time. But yes, I believe I start with the wrist check. Yes, I've been wearing, as I have been most of the time, I've got my Speedmaster on. Just recently switched it back to the flat link bracelet. Can't get wrong with it. You know, it is what it is. We all know this watch. In the glass is a fun little combo that I just made because I have two bottles that I don't like, and I figured I would try to make them better by combining them. And to be fair, I think I kind of did. It's a little bit better. It's one is from a local North Carolina distillery, Oaklore, and then the other one is a private select Maker's Mark. But, yeah. Not great on their own. Together, I think my dog agrees they're better together.
There you go.
Appreciate Eleanor's weighing in on the matter.
Yes, she is very concerned about something behind you right now.
She's always concerned about something. This dog's never not concerned, but that is her, so.
All right, Buzzman, what have you got?
Okay, surprise, surprise, it's the Black Bay. That was on my wrist the entire vacation, 1 week. Plus, so it's good. It's good for Browns games. It's good for Thanksgivings. It's good for everything in between. Going to a children's museum in Erie, Pennsylvania. It's good for that too. They got a badass children's museum. If you are ever up there, it's way over its weight class. And if you're a Cincy Museum Center member, you know, for the local contingent, they have reciprocal membership. So that's pretty good. Quite honestly, one of the most impressive water tables I've ever seen. I haven't seen that many water tables, to be frank, but it didn't smell like a turtle pond, which was because they had this like massive industrial dehumidifier running right next to it. The thing was probably 20 feet long. Really cool. Really, really cool.
Nice.
So, yeah, it is. This is still on my Joob, and I feel like I need to go back to stock right now. I feel like this is a time of the year where the frivolity of the Jubilee, the jubilance of the Jubilee. I don't know. These are serious times. They call for a serious bracelet design, and we all know the most serious of all bracelets is the Oyster. Yeah. So I'm just getting over a sinus infection. So I got some Sleepy Time tea. It's by some like nonsense hippie company that, like, obviously I'd never purchased this. This was my wife's doing. And, I don't know, it had some sort of nonsense quote on the little like paper tab, right? That you pull the bag of tea out with, and it was so nonsense. It's like I don't ever want to give your company money for printing something this stupid. So yeah, but we'll know if it works. If you don't hear much from me at the end of the podcast, I'm just like zonked out, sleeping with the Sleepy Time tea.
Well, I'm trying to remember this. So Sleepy Time, is that a celestial?
It's not. No, this is
Okay. No,
Celestial Seasonings. They got the Sleepy Bear. They're A-OK in my book. You know, he's got the nightcap. He's got his little cozy chair.
Yep.
Ready for some Hong Kong schnoo action. Hell yeah.
Well, and what I will say, like, I've been to their manufacturing facility in Colorado.
Well, that's a fun
fact. Why? Yeah, that is a very fun fact. I'm very intrigued.
It's near enough where my wife's parents live, so, and where she's from. But I will say, as you said, you're nursing a sinus infection.
Getting over it.
Maybe not quite. You're getting over it, but not quite the same thing. If there's any nasal congestion, they have something there that can cure that instantly. And it's known as the peppermint room, where they store and age all of their peppermint for their peppermint tea. And you can go in, and it'll open you right up, and then you can leave. Like, you don't need to get all the way in there. You just need to get about 3 steps in, and like that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Gone.
So here's another random aside. A while back, we purchased a device called the, I don't know the pronunciation, because I think it's pronounced Navage, but that sounds like equally like,
oh yeah,
equally pretentious, but also maybe like a little salacious, right? Yeah. Using it, it makes you feel like, you're drowning. For real. Not that I've ever drowned. Obviously, I'm talking on this podcast to you, but what I imagine drowning to feel like. It does a really good job of getting some deep-seated junk out. I forgot where I was going with this. Yeah, no, I mean, peppermint room. Navage. I don't know how we should pronounce this, but both seem to be a lovely solution to that problem.
Okay, Buzz, I got one more aside here before you continue on. I'm a heavy tea drinker, which, you know, I'm a big tea fan, worked in coffee shops for years, so, you know, love it. But I noticed you were working out of a very interesting glass with this tea. It appears to be a pint glass with a handle.
Hell yeah.
I have never drank my tea out of a... Well, it probably would be better suited for a beer. I've never drank my tea out of that. I like
it. Yeah.
I've never seen it.
I find that most tea bags, you could just steep them forever. And they've got enough oomph for, you know, 12 ounces, 14 ounces of liquid. And honest to God, that's what I do. Is it the strongest cup of tea? No. Is it the fanciest cup of tea? No.
It might be the biggest cup of tea.
It's huge.
Yeah, that's a glass of tea.
You may even get tired of drinking tea. But yes, these mugs are used solely, actually, for tea, which is ridiculous.
I mean, if it works, it works. I can't argue logic like that.
I've got a Halb Maas earthenware mug from the city of Garmisch, and if I drink beer out of a mug, I pretty much only use that. I was randomly in Garmisch-Partenkirchen for their Zwölfhundert Jahre Fest, 1200th year of being a city. So we went down to the fest and drank and enjoyed. And that mug is one of my favorite possessions, bar none.
That's a big resort town, isn't it? Or what is it?
Yeah, the Olympics were held there. Okay. Yeah, it's a mountain town.
Yeah. I've only heard of it. Never been there. Yeah,
it's pretty sweet. Highly recommend. I haven't tried this, but this is something for people to think about. It's a festive time of the year. We got Christmas coming up. We got Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, also New Year's. There are all sorts of festivities going on, right? One of my buddies took a chance, purchased a couple of fifths of good old Woodford Reserve, and made some presents. Cut up some Granny Smith apples, stick some vanilla beans and cinnamon sticks in there, sealed them up. Mm. Figure that all those great little flavors will be steeping between now and Christmas. Going to do those for Christmas gifts for people.
That does not sound bad.
Yeah. I think that Woodford is near ideal for that, because it's good enough that you'd want to drink neat, but not good enough that you would feel bad if, God forbid, this experiment goes awry. Awry. Yeah. It's a bourbon.
Hey-o.
But yeah, just wanted to put that one out there in case anyone wanted to try it. I have to write into the podcast and let us know how it turned out.
Yeah. Christmas gifts are going to be fun this year. Just throw that out there. So.
Are they?
Anyway, I think it's my turn. Is it not? I'll start with what's in the glass. Because we'll talk about what's on the wrist for maybe a little bit longer. I have in the glass. I had a Boulevardier earlier, but wasn't feeling a second one for some reason. I don't know what the deal was, but in the glass, I just have some Old Forester, Old Fine whiskey over some rocks. Just nursing that. It's still part of the birthday pack my wife got me from last year. So still killed one of the small bottles. I think I have parts of the other two or three left. The nice thing about Old Forester is I enjoy it. They're regular, just kind of regular Old Forester. I don't mind mixing. I also don't mind doing other things to it. It's good and it's available, but there are other stuff that is nicer, is nice that it's, you can get it. So
yeah,
that's what I'll say about that on the wrist. And it's funny that we're recording today, because today an article on Fratello dropped that was written by yours truly about this watch. And I had hinted at the fact that we took the family to Hilton Head. We left on November 1st. We came back. And then 2 days later, I flew to Des Moines, Iowa for my final kind of offsite trip for the year. But on that day, on that fateful day in between when I arrived home and when I left, I picked up a new watch. One that I have been waiting for since I wrote an article this March, about wanting them to bring this back. And then shortly after said article was written, was told, hey, just be patient. And then was told, hey, it's going to come out in June, then July. Then they announced it in September or October. And then still it didn't show up in stores until the first week of November. And I'm pretty sure I was the first person to post an in-person photograph of it on Instagram. Like, I looked, and even on Seiko's website, it had only really been renderings. And I'm talking about the SPB 411, which is known as the Seiko Navigator Timer re-edition. And guys, I got to tell you, it didn't go with me to Hilton Head, but it did go to Des Moines. It has barely left my wrist since. It did, however, over the weekend, leave my wrist enough that today, November 27th, was the first day since I've owned this watch that I had to wind it. That's how much nice. It has been getting worn. And it doesn't really have that long of a power reserve. I feel like it's 70 hours. I could be wrong. The article I wrote on Fratello dropped today, and I got to say, like, it's fantastic. Yeah. 38.5 millimeter. Like, I've not ever held a vintage version, but like, I tried to recreate the shots that like Mike had in his original article about the watch from like 2017 from like the one that he has. And I got to say, man, there are times I look down at this and I know it doesn't have the cool little logo below the 10 bar and it says 10 bar, not 70 meters, because it's you know, a little bit more water resistant than the original. But like, there are times I kind of look down at this and say, man, is this new old stock? It just, it looks that much like the original. I think they nailed it. They absolutely nailed it. And I got to say it's on a fully brushed kind of angled Jubilee bracelet that just,
yeah, catches, it works,
the perfect amount of light.
Yeah.
And the clasp is like this little old school kind of just like Seiko square that like goes in, and it has just the perfect amount of little jingle jangle on it. I don't know if you guys can hear that.
I can hear it in my mind.
Just a little in the clasp. Like it feels almost like I'm wearing a vintage watch with just like better build quality. It's I love it.
Yeah. I mean, it is a great looking watch. You know, I was telling Buzz before we started the show that I've been kind of like off social media for a second. So a lot of these releases, I don't really get on to see, but I mean, this watch looks, I don't know how it looks in person, because like, I'll be honest, like when it comes to like, these like, oh, the dial type for that watch, some of them are hit and miss, in my opinion. Although from the pictures, and right, two things here, another two point aside. It's number one, that your article is the very first on Fratello with the big heading right there. Looks great. Number two,
I saw that. I didn't think I was going to be the masthead for today, but that's pretty.
Yeah, funny. You were the masthead. And number two,
I was the masthead.
second aside here, you finally have your headshot on Fratello, so that's a big congratulations.
That's right.
Thank you. Yeah, that might have happened a couple of months ago, but that took a little while too. So yes.
Well, like, oddly, I've just learned
that happened, and then work got crazy, and I haven't written an article in a very long time. So it's like, I got the headshot, I got all that done, and then it was like September, October, November have been crazy from a work perspective. So like, my article writing has dipped quite a bit, but yeah. I think that'll pick up a little bit here more. It's just kind of funny.
Yeah, but what is your opinion on the, I guess, Sunray? Is that what you call the dial?
Yeah, I mean, it's a Sunray finish. It's very subtle. I will say it works well in all lighting. Like it,
yeah, okay.
It can go dark with low light. It can be, but like, the watch is always legible, and like, it's very cliche, but in some ways it's kind of like the finish on the SPB. Like, you had a Willard. I don't think the Willard had the Sunray finish, but all the SPBs kind of have a subtle Sunray. Like, yes. It's kind of like that. So it catches the light in ways that are good. On occasion, it can maybe be a bit bright, but like, man, it's got to be like, you got to be like,
yeah,
holding your watch right into the direct sunlight for it to really kind of be too much.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's the anthracite dial. It's got like the full stainless handset and hour markers. The lume is, it's good. It's not like your typical Seiko diver lume, because they stuck with the vintage aesthetic. So like, the lume plots are really small on the hours, and there's just enough in that little 24 hour hand that you can see it. But like, I'm telling you, man, it's been on my wrist a lot. Yeah. And I'm really starting to kind of agree with a lot of folks who are like, man, 38, 39 millimeters is about perfect for a watch size. It is. Yeah. I know some of the watches that are at 40 wear a little bit smaller, but like, man, this thing, it's the way they do the C case. It's the way the bracelet, I mean, you can see this here, like it has female end links on it's kind of mid range Seiko. Like, you can see like the lug to lug is exactly where the bracelet tapers. Like, you can get that bracelet to go in from the watch. So it's just,
well, yeah, I think perfect. with that C case, the smaller measurements on it don't look small. Like, there's something about that case shape. It just kind of, it's kind of a mirage. So the result is it looks right, but you know, it is physically a little smaller, so it'll wear a little bit more comfortably. Yeah. I liked that article a lot.
Speaking of comfortability.
And that looked bitchin' on that suede strap.
Yes, the strap. Yes.
Well, so you know what I tried to do is I was trying to recreate the shot that Mike had on the leather NATO from his original article about that watch, like a Throwback Thursday article back. I want to say he wrote that in like 2017. So I was trying to recreate that shot. And I think I did an okay job. Not the best, but I did an okay job. The other little thing that I really never noticed until this watch is, I don't have very many watches that don't have a crown at 3 o'clock. And I would say that a crown at 3 o'clock, even a recessed crown or with crown guards like on the Speedy, it's not uncomfortable. I don't notice it digging into my skin. I don't know if it's digging into my hand. But in some ways, like the crown tucked in at like 4 o'clock or just under 4 o'clock, because it's not quite four, it's not quite 4:30. It's in a really weird spot when you see it. But it's a smaller crown, so it's not like a big screw down diver's crown, because it's only got 100 meters of water resistance, so it's only push pull. It makes the case, I feel like, more symmetrical, and it's like really, really comfortable to not have a crown right there at three. Like it's something that I would never think, oh man, a crown at 4 o'clock really kind of puts it out of the way. It's like, oh, it's different, but I actually kind of like it.
Yeah.
I mean, having had the SKX, I can vouch for the like Seiko 4 o'clock-ish crown. Highly comfortable. Yeah. I do think a lot of times it looks kind of like odd. You're so... If the crown's not at three and it's not a lefty watch, Destro, deal, like, come on, what are we doing? Yes, there are bull heads. Yes, like, it's not, in the grand scheme of things, like, something that's never happened. Like, for example, I would say there's probably never been a watch with a crown at, like, 1 o'clock because the lugs are there, right? But, yeah, it's a position that works. It's a position that's comfortable.
There is one at 2 o'clock, though.
It's true.
Our friends at Zodiac have the Olympus at 2 o'clock.
Yes, exactly. Well, and that is with the case. Yeah, the case, I mean, yeah, that's a very...
A unique case.
That's very... consciously designed for it, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Because you've got those cuts and it's on both sides of the case. I think that, you know, that is one thing, like on the SKXs, for example, right? The crown guards are there because it's a dive watch. It's got to have those. But they are some kind of very odd, very organic shapes. And I think that kind of adds to the funk meter, to the funkiness.
Well, it's funny. I know I moved a couple of watches to bring this one into the collection. And it's funny because you mentioned the original SKX 013. The new Seiko 5 kind of SKXs, like those Seiko 5 GMTs, fantastic watches, but that's one of the ones that I let go.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that if I had that watch and this watch in the collection, as much as I really enjoyed that orange SKX, mm-hmm. That orange Seiko 5, it would not get any wrist time. Like my... I will say that my assumption on that was like, if I had both of these, this one wouldn't get worn. Completely accurate, because not much else has been getting, like, the El Primero hasn't been getting worn. The Speedy has barely been getting, like, that part of it is because it's the new watch. But like, I'd say I picked this up and it's tough to put down. I mean, the mid case on this sucker, it's got the kind of Seiko magic where the case back, at least for me, kind of sinks in between my two wrist bones. But like, look mm-hmm. at that. The mid case, it's so Belt. Thin.
Yeah.
It's
killer.
It's just, they did such a good job. And the thing that I don't know whether I agree or disagree with this, but like, and I put this in the article, the original was a collar and Flyer GMTs didn't really come out until the mid 80s. So this is true to the original with it being a caller. Now, my little hack is I set it to GMT or to Zulu time. And then if I know, I know a couple of time zones that I track. I have a sister-in-law who lives in Germany. I know where everybody else lives. Like, I know what the adjustment is.
Yeah.
So if you set it to GMT, you can say, okay, well, GMT plus one, minus one, plus three, minus, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. You just spin the bezel, and it's got a really good, smooth, bidirectional friction bezel, which I'm glad friction bezels are kind of having a moment. Like, there's the Breitling that has them. There's the Seiko 5s. There's, the, like, a good friction bezel, I feel like, is a bit of a challenge because you have to set it firm enough that it doesn't just kind of spin loosey-goosey, but not so firm that, like, you can't move it. So, like, and, dialing that in is pretty skillful.
As the resident engineer on the podcast, I deal with friction every day. And here's the fun thing, right? Absolutely every part you design has tolerances associated with it. So you've got friction, you've got your stack up from your tolerance, which leads to whatever mechanism you're using having to work well in a wide variety of clearances between the parts. And the different amount of compression is going to typically make the friction act quite a bit differently. So yeah, I mean, you've got to design something that's going to work at a population level with a whole bunch of different dimensions. And even if you are controlling these dimensions really small, right? I mean, thou here, thou there, it does add up. And a lot of the times, and now here's the worst kicker, right? I mean, this is something that's got to work essentially forever. Yes, I know you can take it apart and you can service it and whatnot. A lot of times, if you've got a limited use device, you're going to tame friction at a population level by employing various lubricants or surface finishes, stuff like that. But you really don't have that option here. So it's more than meets the eye, right? Versus a Paul. It's got its own challenges.
I don't know much about friction. I took physics twice.
Hell yeah.
I know about forces. But I don't know. I feel like friction bezels are you're right, Spence. They're definitely having a moment, and I feel like the thing with friction bezels is that you either get it right or you get it wrong. There is no in between.
Yep.
There really is not. If it's a good friction bezel, it is. It's like, ooh, this is firm enough, but it's like I can't really move it that well if I'm like just like, you know, screwing around with it. Otherwise, it's kind of just like there, and it's like, oh god, am I going to move it? Am I going to hit it? Is it going to knock it off? Even though I'm not really using the bezel, but like in the back of my mind, I live in a world where I do use the bezel, and so like I worry about that sometimes, even though I shouldn't. But yeah, right, friction bezels, very hit and miss, in my opinion.
Well, and the thing with it too, like in some ways, it's like, and I feel like this is a pretty appropriate comparison. It's like taking a very cold stick of butter and trying to heat it to the point where you can slice it, but still spread it and have it not like completely melt into a puddle as you slice it. Like you need to get it so it's dialed in where you have that good, just the good knife slice. And then you're like, I'm going to put that on the slice of bread and it's going to spread nicely.
Yes.
Versus, okay, it's still too cold. I can't move it. Uh-huh. Or I'm going to attach my knife to it and the whole stick's just going to, you know what I mean? Like,
well,
it's a very, very delicate process.
That's not where I thought you were going with that. I thought that you were saying that the solution to making friction bezels work correctly is that they're made with Kerrygold butter that is stored at room temperature, so it slices beautifully.
Wow, Kerrygold, you're getting the good stuff, Buzz.
Dude, okay, so I gotta tell you, Rachel made the sweet potatoes when we got home. So like we did Thanksgiving up in Chicago with my extended family and my brother and his kids and everybody like that. And then we came back and we always get a Eli's smoked turkey breast for when we come back because we don't get to bring leftover turkey with us from up north. So then she makes all of her dishes that she didn't get to make because they're too hard to transport And somehow this year she decided to use like the grass, like it wasn't Kerrygold, but it was like just a half a step down from Kerrygold in the sweet potatoes. And then this is the other thing that I think was a happy accident. She added the marshmallows on top, and she's like, I don't want to say overcooked because the end result was perfect, but like the marshmallows got a little bit too broiled. So what happens with marshmallows, which are mainly sugar, is they kind of turn into a caramel. So like this dish of sweet potatoes that had the pecans and everything, and it was literally like a small crust away from being a dessert. Like, and it's like, there's still plenty of it left even a couple days later, because she made it on Saturday, and it's like, she's like, okay, so I'm gonna have to remember the combination of the grass-fed, like nicer butter with a slightly overcooked marshmallow top is the way to go.
So, I mean, okay, sweet potatoes, obviously, they are the way that dessert sneaks forward into the entree portion of their meal.
It is.
Plus, those of us know, you have to take Kendrick at face value when he tells you the yams is the power that be, right? Yes. Okay, buy good butter, people, for crying out loud.
Yes.
Do not screw around with store brand with the medium. Also, eggs, like you'll like look at the store and you'll be like, oh, well, crap, like these fancy eggs are like four times like the perfectly normal, even, you know, not even like the foam carton, like builder grade ones, but like, yeah, the brown
builder
ones
that grade are eggs.
Exactly. Yeah. The mass produced brown eggs are, they're like half a step up. No. Especially if you are primarily eating the eggs themselves, that you're not like throwing them into a bunch of cakes and stuff. Buy the most expensive ones at the grocery store. Thank me. Guess what? Do you know that yolks can be any, you know, don't have to be pale yellow? They're orange, bright, vivid, beautiful orange. Do you know how delicious those yolks are? They're fantastic. Nature's multivitamin. Cook them just a little jammy, right? So you still get some of that flavor, and you haven't denatured all of the cholesterol in the yolk, so your body more easily converts it to all the hormones you need. Good eggs, good butter. It's worth it. You know, offset your costs. Don't buy something stupid from the middle of the store. Buy better eggs and butter. You'll live better. Okay, that's my second rant of the night. I didn't know I had two rants of the night in me. Obviously, the sleepy time tea isn't working for anything.
Well, or it's working
too much. You're waving around.
You're in that weird zone. You're in that weird zone where you're like,
oh, you're fighting.
Moments of clarity before you.
Oh, there you go. Hey. Yeah, I would call that a good Monday night.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah, you're in a sweet spot.
So I gotta go back to the one point I made in the article, which is my original article in March. I was really, really hoping this would be a flyer.
Mm-hmm.
And I still kind of wish it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen the dimensions on the sharp edge. And they haven't really thrown that movement anywhere else.
Yeah.
And what I would say is, kind of like what I wrote in the article, if this watch was 40 or 41 and 14 millimeters thick, I don't think it's as good.
Yeah, I will agree with you on that, because my thing when it comes to those, like, the C-shaped cases, I feel like they're already wonky enough as it is, just sitting on your wrist looking down at them. If they start to get a little bit high on the wrist too, it kind of just throws off the whole dimensions of it. Because, like, right, when I had the T-Graph from Doxa, it's the same K-shape too, but that thing is like 15 mils, 15 and a half thick, something like that. And, like, it looks great when you're looking down on it, but when your wrist kind of gets off to the side and your, like, peripheral hits it, it doesn't look right for whatever reason. At least for me, it just doesn't look great. So, yes, C-shaped cases need to be thin. As thin as possible.
I think that they look best thin. Thin is in. You know, like if it's the 80s all over again. Also, I mean, PSA, though, for, you know, height measurements. Obviously, they're watches with gnarly numbers that due to the dome crystal, right? So, like, I was thinking specifically when you said T-Graph, I was thinking specifically the Doxa 300, right? I'm sure the thickness number on that is somewhat gnarly, but it's like gorgeous and svelte on wrist because you've got that nice domed crystal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this does have a slight top hat crystal on it too, or slightly don't like it. It just, I feel like this watch at 38 and a half and 12 and a half is about perfect. This watch at 40 to 40 and a half and 13 and a half to 14 would be, now in fairness, that's what the SPB essentially is, but that's an H case diver with more water resistance. So it's a little bit more forgivable in that way.
Yeah.
I just, now what I, and it's funny because Mike and I were talking, Mike Stockton and I were talking after I picked this up. This, like, if you're going for a watch that looks vintage and has that vibe, you absolutely have to nail the dimensions. And they did. But I'm really hoping, like, tell me that wouldn't look good with a blue dial. Tell me that wouldn't look good with a yellow dial or a salmon dial or a, honestly, I would probably keep the bezel steel, but you could go with a black bezel. Like, you could do a number of things to make more references out of this case in a non-limited fashion. And I feel like you get, like, have fun with this like you did the Seiko 5. Maybe not as much fun because it's at a higher price point, but have some fun. Make this the LE. Don't do another anthracite dial.
Yeah.
But, like, go black. Have a black sunburst finish with a red hand. Throw an orange GMT. Like, have some fun with this because now you've got it. Now you've got the dimensions. You've got the case. You've got everything set up. Make the crap out of this watch.
Yeah. Just
make a couple of different references. Seiko does that anyway. Six Ways from Sunday on everything else. Like, just make a bunch more of these.
Yep. Yep.
Like the Willard, do like
10 different dial combinations, the Seiko 5s, the SPBs, so many dial combinations, so many bezel options. 100%, 100% they will do that.
Make the shit out of this.
Like, yes.
Yep. It's a great case. Just make it fun of them.
So, yes.
In other
this
colors.
Is the obvious low-hanging fruit to do that, to do exactly that. Although, dear listeners at home, we were treated to a like close-up video of the watch face right as you were making that point, and God, the steel bezel, the charcoal dial, the tasteful hints of red—it's too frickin' perfect. When you're saying that it would look good with all those other colors, I kept on thinking, "Eh, it'd look all right. Not as good as that charcoal does, though. Dang."
I agree with you. Can I tell you the thing that they absolutely nailed? If you look at it head on, you can just barely tell that Seiko is applied. Just barely. And if you tilt it, you're like, oh, that's a nice apply. The way, like, the Seiko applied logo at 12 o'clock is amazing. Like, it is just, like, just so well done.
Yeah. Applied logos.
I don't know how to describe it.
Applied logos need to come back. They need to have their moment in the sun here.
Well, but like you gotta hit the proportions right too, though.
Yeah, it's very hard. That's why I'm sure it's very, especially when you're doing an applied logo on a vintage inspired watch. I'm sure it's so hard to do, so challenging. But even on newer watches,
the original was applied. So just like go find one in your collection and say, how big did we make this? Let's make it the same bigness.
Yeah. I want like, the same bigness. Yes. Yeah, no, I agree with you, though. 100%, that Apply logo makes that dial for me personally. I guess there's a lot of things that make that dial. The vintage font, like near the 12 o'clock, chef's kiss, great. Apply logo, great. The pop of color with the red hand, oh, great. On that sunburst gray dial. There's nothing really to fault on that watch dial, which is rare.
If you go back and look, the version that Mike has, the original, mm-hmm. the 6117-8000, I believe, has a small, it's not the Prospect X, thank goodness, but there's a little like sideways square with two, it almost looks like the Officine Panerai logo, but not. There's just this little tiny logo. At the bottom it says
Water resist.
They no longer say waterproof because like they used to say waterproof, and then I feel like they were told you're not allowed to say waterproof because technically nothing is.
Yeah.
So they all moved away from that. So it doesn't say waterproof like his does. It says water resistant, and it doesn't say 70 meters because it's 100 meters, so it's 10 bar.
Yeah.
Underneath it, his just has this little like diagonal square logo.
Yeah, yeah.
Had they put that on, which I don't know why they didn't. They own it. Like, why not just do that? But, like, that's the one thing that I think is missing.
Yes.
But, like, that's a very, very, very small nit to pick. Other than that, it's spot on.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got the vintage one up that you're describing. And, yeah, it would have been cool. Yeah, that little logo at the bottom is very cool. I don't really know. I guess that's the Seiko logo, I want to say.
Just I have no idea.
Yes, I don't know. I feel like I've seen that logo before. I feel like it's on the Seiko 5s, isn't it? Or am I just going crazy? Maybe I'm going crazy.
You might be.
I might be. I'm going to look into that.
It's been a while since I've seen you, so I don't know what your mental state is at this point.
I mean, my beard's a little bit longer. I work a lot, so unfortunately.
It is.
Yeah, no, I'm going to have to look into that. I'm going to find the meaning of that. But speaking of dial, I feel like I've brought this up before in the podcast. I am very happy they left off the Prospects logo off of this watch.
So happy. So happy.
They should be doing that with the majority of their watches on the Prospects line because it's just a bit very big and clunky. And if it would have been on this watch, it just would have ruined the dial. Ruined it for me. But yes, I'm very happy they left that out.
So the interesting thing about it, too, is I look at some of the other models that they've put it on versus the ones they haven't, and it seemed like there had been, like, the re-editions that come out only on a strap that are like supposed to be like the SLA re-editions had always been the ones that didn't have the Prospects logo, but the ones that were an SPB or something kind of in the mid price point always had it.
Yeah.
I feel like this might be one of the few that's down in that like lower tier. That's still an SPB that doesn't have it. And I'm so glad that it's not on there.
Yes.
So glad. And in fairness, at 38 millimeters, I don't know where they would have put it.
No, it would have made it way too busy on the dial.
Yep, I agree. So, I don't even think it's on the back.
Great. Just get rid of it.
It isn't. Please. It isn't. They kind of went with the vintage case back, too, which is pretty stellar. So, like, I'm telling you, man, like...
Yeah,
simple. I've got another article coming out about consolidation in the watch collection. And this was the watch that kind of inspired it, because I knew I was going to move some pieces to pick this up. Because they weren't going to get wrist time.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's as much as I've been wearing this, it makes me think like, okay, what else could I live without? What else do I want? What should I like take three or four pieces and turn into like one really killer piece? So, I don't know.
Yeah. And I was going to say, you have felt an emotion that not a lot of watch people feel. Because when you sold that Seiko, the Seiko 5 GMT to get that, and you're like, oh yeah, it's... I would never have worn the Seiko 5. I feel that I don't know if I've ever experienced that. When you sell a watch and then you get a watch and it's like, oh yeah, this watch is substantially better. If I would have kept on to that watch, I never would have worn it. So I'm very jealous of that.
What I will say though is that's easier at the lower end.
Yes.
I feel like there are things at the higher end where you're like, man, I know what I would need to do to make that happen. And it is watches that I tend to think that I would still continue to wear.
Yeah.
So like the one that I go back and forth on is the Moser Streamliner. I love the Green Dragon, and they just released the new small seconds, which is killer, but even more expensive. But the the OG Green Dragon is such a good looking piece, and it's 39 millimeters. But like, I know the number of watches that would have to go. to make that happen.
Yeah.
And it's ones that would be very difficult to part with.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, at that point, it's not really worth it. At least in my mind,
I would agree. I would agree. But that is, as somebody who has never tried that watch on. And what I would say is, if I'm ever in a position to be able to try that watch on,
mm-hmm.
that's going to tip things in one direction or another. And I don't know which direction that's going to be. So
yeah,
we'll see. Jury's still out on that. But
I have faith. More so for the fact that I would love to see it on your wrist so I could just try it on. But yeah, no, I have faith that will happen one day.
It might. You never know. But anyway, well, we were trying to keep this short. And dear listeners, I do have to say, we did try to record a week and a half ago, but our recording software definitely
let us dead.
Yes.
So
big time.
We're going to be a little bit more regular. There was a lot of travel and it was well needed. And the nice thing is, you know, we come back, we talk about some new stuff. I have Buzzy. I know you're on the fence, and Spangler, you're not in town, but like Whiskey and Watches at Richter and Phillips is this week. So I'm going to come back with a bunch of fun stories. It's going to be a lot of fun. There'll be more content coming between now and the end of the year. So I'm looking forward to it. It was a nice little break, but we're not going anywhere. The rumors of our demise have been greatly exaggerated. Not that there were really any rumors.
I was going to say,
there really weren't. Honestly, the download stats they dropped off, but not appreciably so. I mean, there was still a decent number for us not having a new episode in 4 weeks. Oh, and something else, just to plug our buddies. Our last episode was with our buddy Nick from Strap Habit. His sale is probably over, but go out. He's got a bunch of fun stuff. I ordered a couple of things. I'm excited to have those come in. Same thing, our buddy Zach at Cincy Strapco. His sale is also likely over, but I picked up a couple of things there. I mean, I've got the red leather strap for the El Primero. I felt like this year I needed to add the blue leather strap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'll also go well in the Grand Seiko.
Good choice.
So a couple of things there, here and there. And he's got some new, like cotton style straps. So go check those out. But go see stuff from our buddies. And anyway,
yeah,
that's where I'm at. I feel like that's a good spot to end. What do you guys think?
Sounds good to me, man.
Kosher for me. All right.
Well, hopefully only until next week.
See ya.